Kane is in the building.
Guys, you know how much we love Liberty shirts. Their flannels are unbelievable, and when we were job hunting, we wore Liberty shirts for our interviews and now to work every day. We thought Liberty was our secret until we started seeing their shirts on TV on Fox Sports every Saturday and Sunday. Now we know they are for real, but they are still our secret. Save 10% on your order when you enter the promo code 3PEAT at checkout. Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. This is episode 11 of season 4. We're coming back with you this week after a great episode last week. Alan Hahn was on. If you haven't listened yet, go take a listen. We had a lot of fun. But anyways, for this week's show, I'm your host, Alex Castle, and I'm joined with
Josh Fromowitz,
Stephen Benazzo.
Welcome back, boys. We're shooting on a Saturday today, right before football. A little different from usual, but nice change of pace. Got a lot of great topics today. We're first going to start off with college hoops. We're back in college hoop season. Start off the season, we had Duke play Kentucky at the Garden. Duke ended up winning by 8. It's Coach K's last season, so let's first talk about that. One of the most legendary coaches in all of college basketball. He's left quite a mark, not only at the program, but just the history of the sport itself. Josh, what do you see this season being like for Duke? Is this a season where they really got to start figuring out, you know, new ways to approach the game going forward? Or is this, you know, we're playing for Coach K and whatever happens, happens?
After a year like they had last year where they were just terrible, I think this year Duke is ready to bounce back and make a return into a March Madness run. And with their big win against Kentucky, like you said, at the Garden, they showed the talent that they have. Paolo Banchero, Wendell Moore, and there's a freshman guard.
Trevor Keels.
Yeah. He had 25. He was nasty. I think that Duke is ready to prove once again that they're on top, winning for Coach K and just the talent they have. So I think this is going to be a fun year to be if you're a Blue Devil fan, because hard to see many teams that'll be able to compete with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you said, it was crazy that Duke did not have the season that they had last season. So this is a major bounce back season. And it's funny that it happens to be on the season that Coach K goes out. And it was fun watching Kentucky too. You know, John Calipari, also a legendary coach in the game. Kentucky also, I feel like, has been a little under the radar lately. Haven't really had those big seasons that we've seen recently. Stevie, what are your thoughts on Kentucky going into this season?
I think they'll be a big competitor in the SEC like they usually are. But it was funny, like you said, Duke last year, very underwhelming performance by them. Kentucky for the SEC, very underwhelming performance. Both missed a tournament last year while our Hawks made the tournament. So it's funny how like those two teams did and then a school like ours did. But nevertheless, you know, I think Kentucky, they kept it pretty close with Duke for most of the game. I just think Duke has a really strong roster. But Kentucky got a lot of transfers. They got a kid from Georgia who's pretty good at guard. They got a kid from West Virginia who is a machine rebounding, especially offensive rebounding. He grabbed 20 rebounds either during today's game and then that first game against Duke, he had like 18. So they got talent. They got size. They will be good, especially Coach Cal. And I was listening to the press conference or saw a video on Twitter, and I forget what – I think it was a Duke player or a Kentucky player saying that, I can't believe this was our last time playing Coach K, blah, blah, blah. And then either Coach Cal or Coach K was like, well, hopefully not, because these two teams expect to make a far run into March Madness. So, and I think very well both can. And it's early. They just got to figure it out. I mean, Duke seems like they've already kind of figured it out. But Kentucky, that was a tough first game to go against. But I think they got talent. Like I said, they have size. They got great coaching. So I think they'll just be they'll be just fine.
Absolutely. And I know we've been, you know, talking a lot about these two teams already, but I think that this game between these two was such a great way to kick off college basketball, because when I think of college basketball, at least, I'm usually putting my attention most into it with March Madness. It's a big tournament, but the fact that these two teams started the season off playing each other on a big stage, and you got the story with Coach K and Calipari, I think it's great for the sport. And I think it's going to show for a very competitive season.
It was cool. I don't know how many, you know, of you listeners watched the game, or you two watched. I know I was watching. And it's cool seeing Obi Toppin there supporting his younger brother, Jacob, who plays for Kentucky. Seeing R.J. Barrett, Julius Randle, R.J. playing at Duke just a few years ago. Julius playing for Kentucky, led them to the national championship against UConn. Go UConn. UConn ended up winning that game. There's just so many stars of, especially a lot of Knicks players, since it was at MSG, and a lot of them have played for either Coach K or Coach Calipari. So it was cool seeing all of them there, you know, supporting their squads and, you know, still being there and representing the schools. You know, a lot of these guys are one and done, but it's still nice to see R.J. Barrett supporting Duke and Julius Randle, or like Obi Toppin. He played for Dayton, but it was nice for him to be able to watch his little brother play for a big school like Kentucky in a big-time game like that. So I thought that was a really cool part of the game.
Absolutely, and I think it, you know, like you said, it's great that these guys are showing support even after a one-and-done type year. And, you know, it's really cool for these younger guys to see, and I think it kind of motivates them in a way. So we'll definitely continue to follow those two teams, you know, see what Duke, what kind of run Duke can make for Coach K's final season. But another team I want to talk about that I'm really excited to watch is Memphis, you know, coached by Penny Hardaway. I believe former NBA player Mike Miller is also part of that coaching staff. James Wiseman, you know, he just drafted from there. They opened up their season beating, who was it? I believe they played Tennessee Tech. And they played well. And, you know, this is a team, it's very interesting because, you know, this is another team in the league now that's coached by a former NBA player. I believe Michigan is still coached by Juwan Howard. Is that accurate? Yeah. So this is a very interesting thing for me to see because, you know, Penny Hardaway, obviously a very respectable player during his time, played with the Orlando Magic with Shaq. And a lot of people consider him a great guard. And, you know, I want to open up the floor to you guys about this now, but do you think this kind of creates any sort of storyline, you know, a former NBA player starting out his coaching career at the collegiate level, a lot of success already sending some pretty good guys to the league? Josh, what do you think about this?
Yeah, 100%. You also forgot Knicks legend Patrick Ewing.
That's right. He's with Georgetown, right? Yep.
So he's still coaching his alma mater. So it's really cool to see, and I think it's great for the game because these guys who may not end up at a smaller top school might look to go to those Dukes, UNCs, Kentuckys over these schools because these other schools have NBA legends as coaches, that definitely helps bring in more recruits. Memphis a few years ago wouldn't have been talked about as this elite program, but Penny Hardaway comes in and now they're getting multiple five-star recruits on their team. Amani Bates, Jalen Duren, just to name these two. So I really like it, and I think it's great for the competitiveness of the sport of college basketball.
My two freshman that I'm the most excited to watch for the whole season and hope that they can make it far, lead their teams far into the NCAA tournament. Amani Bates. Sorry about that. So my two freshmen, Amani Bates and Paolo Banchero. I think those two are going to be top lottery picks. They got a lot of talent. And watch out because those dudes can ball.
Amani Bates is also like a really interesting situation. He's only 17 right now. He was able to forego his senior year of high school to play at Memphis. Not eligible to be a one and done yet. They could build something really unique at Memphis because he still has the option to end up in the G League next year. But I think with Penny Hardaway, and he's the reason why Amani Bates ended up there, I really think they could build a really nice foundation at Memphis for years to come.
And the funny thing, well, not funny, but like it's just another interesting thing with Amani Bates is he was committed to Michigan State for a long time to play under, Tom Izzo? You know, to play under Tom Izzo, and obviously Michigan State has had a lot of success. And then he decommitted and committed to play for Penny Hardaway. So that goes back to the almost Penny Hardaway effect, how Memphis has had some big-time names, Derrick Rose, play for them. And I believe Coach Cal was the head coach, right, when D. Rose was there. So they've had big names in that program before, but then obviously – for a while, they were just kind of not talked about. But now they're getting guys, you know, some of these top guys. I think Penny Hardaway is a great coach for them. So Memphis is going to be a program to watch for a long time, unless if Penny Hardaway leaves and they just don't recruit as well as they do now. But if they just keep doing and following this plan that they're doing, they're going to be a good team to play for and watch and – a dangerous team come March Madness time.
There's also Gonzaga is another team. They have Chad Holmgren. He's a 7-foot unicorn type player, kind of similar to built like Kristaps Porzingis with this crazy height, but not as much of a post up guy. He looks to shoot from the outside. So that'll be fun to see.
And funny you say that because Chet Holmgren, he went off in his first game. And I didn't realize how skinny the dude was until I saw a picture of him. But I'm telling you this now, because obviously being a Connecticut native, we don't have professional sports. So UConn basketball, women's, especially women's, and then men's too. It's like our baby, you know, and this is when it's basketball time in Connecticut, it's all UConn. UConn men's, Donovan Klingon, something like that. He's from Bristol Central, 7-footer. Four-star player, committed to the Huskies. So next season, he'll be on the Huskies. Watch out for him. I believe he's going to be a big impact player. I feel like he might kind of be like a Chet Holmgren, maybe not as good, but he might be the Chet Holmgren for UConn come next year. So I'm telling you, you know, you probably will see some highlights of him now that he's kind of made it big time and made his decision. And, you know, I think he still has a senior year of high school at Bristol Central, but that dude's going to be good. So if you've seen the highlights and stuff like that, I'm telling you, I told you so, all right? The both of you and everyone listening.
I was just going to say, Stevie, you heard it here, Husky Nation. Watch out. And you know what? It would be great to see UConn get back on the map. Let's not forget, they've made it to the Final Four before. They've had some very big moments in the tournament.
Four-time national champs.
Yep. Four-time national champs.
And then the women's don't get started on the way.
That's historic, but they're not a team to take lightly. So as someone who went to school in Connecticut, spent a lot of time there, it'd be nice to see UConn succeed. But hey, it's not the only team we support in Connecticut. We got to talk about our Hawks. And not a great start to the season so far, unfortunately, though. They're 0-2, losing the season opener to Wagner, losing to Campbell. Right now they are currently losing to Army 74-67. So Stevie, let's start off with you. You're still going there. You got some connections on the team. You're working at the games. What do you like about this roster going into the season?
Well, this roster is definitely, and listening from what Coach Gallagher has said on podcasts and interviews, this is a very athletic roster. They still have Austin Williams. We know what Austin Williams can do. Last year, he was our leading scorer. Just an athletic guy, can shoot, can drive, plays defense well. Return Hunter Marks. We got a couple of transfers. Jared Kimbrough, 6'8", long, athletic. He could shoot a little bit too. DeJuan Clayton taking over for Tracy Carter, who, in my opinion, Tracy Carter was best point guard in UHeart history, helped us, you know, helped lead us to the promised land, the championship for the first time ever. And DeJuan Clayton so far has shown some promise, but, you know, he was so successful at Coppin State, and to come to a whole new program, it's going to take some time for him to adjust. So that Moses. So we still have a lot of athletic guys. And we're still led by Coach Gallagher, who the players love, the school loves, the fans love him. You know, everyone loves Gallagher. The only thing, and I think this is why they're struggling, one, they're turning the ball over a lot. They're turning the ball over way too much, way more than they did last year. So that's not helping. But also, it's a lot of new guys filling in. You know, we lost Tracy Carter. You know, last year we lost Malik Ellison. I thought that was going to be a huge loss. It was. But we had some guys step up. Like, Austin Williams took that next step to fill in for Malik's spot. And then we still had Tracy and then the rest of our guys. This year, we need a guy to fill in for Tracy. And no one has done that yet. And it's a lot of new guys. And, yes, they may be very, very talented. They may be coming from some big program, you know, not huge programs, but they might be coming from other programs and seeing a lot of success there. But you're trying to put all these pieces and have them work together well. And there's a lot of expectations of, you know, a lot of drama and news going on with this school, you know, the athletic program here. So there's a lot going on right now. And I think that's why you see these guys not playing to the ability that they know they can and that us fans expect them to. And so, I'm not saying like we're screwed, we're not going to do anything. No, I think when it comes to conference play, we're going to be ready. But these first couple of games, it's going to take them time to adjust. And we're playing all different teams. You know, it's not like we're playing America East teams. We know what to expect from them. We're playing Army. We're playing Campbell. You know, I don't know if we've ever even played Campbell before. I never even knew Campbell existed until I saw them on the schedule when it was first released. So I think once they start playing together more, kind of learn like, all right, we need this guy to, you know, dominate the ball, you know, need this guy to do this. Once they start figuring out, all right, what they do best at and what their kind of role is, then you're going to start seeing them click. But until then, this is why they're starting to struggle. And I mean, they played Campbell tough. They were winning that whole game. I actually had to do STN, so I wasn't able to catch the last part of the game. But when I saw they lost by one, I was heartbroken because they actually played so well and they're shooting the ball well. And then today, Army's been giving them some trouble, but Army played Duke tough. So it's not like they're playing poor teams. It's not like they're playing, you know, bottom D1 teams, or even some schools I'm seeing, they're playing D2, D3 teams. So we got a tough schedule so far. And obviously they haven't accounted for a win, but trust me, the time for success is coming. I'm not worried about it.
I'm glad to hear it. And, you know, Stevie, I think you pointed out some factors that are really, you know, taking a toll, you know, the news going around the school, the fact that the program will turn Division III soon, which is still very upsetting because of the run that they made last year. The chemistry, there's a lot. But I'm very confident in Coach Gal, and I think he can make the turnaround. But the big question which I have for you, Josh, is because you've also been paying close attention to the Hawks this season, with all the factors we've discussed, knowing the talent that's there, knowing how Coach Gallagher is, do you think we can make back-to-back returns to the tournament?
Yeah, 100%. I think they have these games for a reason. They're tune-up games. America East Conference is not a conference that will have an automatic bid based on strength of schedule, all of that. So essentially, I look at all these games. Yes, wins are important, but essentially they're like preseason games in the sense that they're tune-up games. You get better each game. You see what your week, what works, what doesn't, where your weak spots are, what rotations work, defense schemes, all of that. So yes, the first game they played was an ugly loss, but we saw their second game against Campbell last night. That was a very hard-fought game. They're playing Army well, like you just mentioned, Steve. They have these games set in place against other mid-major schools who are also pretty in the same situation, essentially. They're at the top of their conference and looking to get better and looking to get into March Madness. So you have all these teams fighting, and I like our chances when it comes to conference play, because at the end of the day, that's really what matters when it comes to Hartford's schedule. We have all these games to prep for Vermont, Stony Brooks, all of that. So I think Hartford, Coach Gal, the guys, the players will be ready for when America East Conference play starts and rolls up in a few weeks.
Another note too is, you know, you could tell the guys on the team are close. They're going to work to make sure they fix this. And, you know, they're also just good people and stuff like that. They're really like respectful, not just athletes, but also students. And so I'm not worried. You know, it's not like it's a group that they walk around like they, just because they won last year, that it's automatically, no, they don't carry themselves like that. They carry themselves like, let's do it again. You know, they're humble. And I think that goes to them just being them themselves, but also Coach Gal. And so, like I said, I'm not worried about it now. I think we just got to work these early kinks out. And once they do that, then, I mean, you see with the hose, once it's got, you know, a kink in it, it's not really, the water doesn't come out strong and, you know, the way you want it to. Once you undo it and stuff like that and get it to where it's, you know, fine, the water comes out much smoother, much nicer. And I think that's what this team has to do. And it's not just us. It's, you know, probably other teams too that are sitting in the same kind of boat as us where they know they can be playing better. But it's just so early in the season, especially for basketball season. You know, it's not like football where three games is, you know, say for college, a third of the season or, you know, a little more, a little less. Like three games into college basketball is not, they play like 30 games, possibly more. So it's not, they still have a lot of time to work this out. And I, like I said before, I think they will.
I like the analogy with the hose, Stevie. Very, very, very smooth there. But I agree. You know, it's early part of the season. They'll work out those kinks, as we've all elaborated on. Coach Gal, fantastic coach. And I think, you know, a point that you made, Stevie, about how these guys are not only, you know, respectable athletes, but they're respectable students too. And I think that's something that Coach Gallagher makes a very big point to emphasize, is that you walk around and you carry yourselves well and you represent the team well. And I think we'll see that as the season continues to progress. We're going to keep following the Hawks. After today's game, got a big game next week, next Thursday, November 18th against Boston University.
I'll be working the game. All right. So, and I might be doing cameras. So if you watch it, you know, you won't see me, but the camera you're watching might be me. So just
if you see smooth pans from camera two, that's all Stevie B, folks. So beware of that. But it's going to be great to continue to follow these Hawks. Really hope that they can make that push for the tournament again. I know that was definitely one of the highlights of my time at Hartford. I'm sure Josh can agree, watching the Hawks make history. So it'll be great. And we'll continue to follow that. But
watching the Hawks and making three-peat. There we go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The top two. And we're going to continue to do both and follow both. And it'll be good. So go Hawks. But we got to switch. Now we're going to kick it up and we're going to talk pro hoops. Because this season has been really something to follow so far. First, we got to open up a topic that we've covered heavily that we want to continue is the Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia. Recently, it came out that Boston was a potential team that they were going to try to trade for. I think it came out that Philly's asking price was Jaylen Brown, and I'm pretty sure Boston's not going to bite at that because Jaylen Brown is the star of that team. You could say Tatum. Tatum could be a good argument, but I think it's Brown. I think Brown is fantastic. So that's not going to happen. So Philly is now back to square one. And this news came out recently that Ben Simmons is now consulting someone about his mental health issues. And it's come out now that apparently the Sixers are kind of disregarding that and kind of pushing him to play even more. And Josh, you and I were talking about this, and you had a very good insight on this whole situation. So I want you to talk about it. You know, do you think Philly's handled this well? Do you think they should be working with Simmons more if he's having these issues off the court?
I think both parties, like I've said from the start, are at fault completely. And both sides have handled this and escalated this to where this is unfixable, this relationship between Ben Simmons and Philly. And when I saw the news that you just mentioned that came out earlier this week, and I was talking to you about it, and I said that I think Philly is completely at fault here because when it comes to someone's mental health, they were pushing him even more, which is not going to help Ben Simmons because he's already thrown off by them. He's not going to magically change his mind and decision. So Philly needed to, from the beginning, back off a little, let him have his space. But the open communication between both parties needed to be there. So I think it's bad. I wouldn't be shocked if it gets to the point where Philly ends up cutting him, because obviously they can't find a trade partner yet. And I don't know how much longer Philly wants to worry about having to deal with his issues, his requests, the fining, all of this. So I think Philly might end up just cutting him. Philly's on a great run right now. It looks solid with Tyrese Maxey being the point guard of the team. He definitely is looking like a franchise point guard for the Sixers. We know what Joel Embiid is capable of. There's much more floor spacing that this team has without Ben Simmons on the court. So I wouldn't be shocked if they just cut him and finally move on from this drama.
You know, that's interesting. Sorry, Castle. That's interesting you say that, Fromwitz, because you see, like, you think, why would they just cut Ben Simmons? But you look at other leagues. Odell, that situation wasn't working. The Browns just said, you know what? Screw it. And then they just traded, released him. And he even cleared waivers. And then he decided where to sign. So you're starting to see more stars where if, like, it's starting to impact the team, especially Ben Simmons, even if he were to play at Philly, I think he'd make them worse because of all this drama relating back to it. And the Sixers are insane for thinking they can get Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons. 2 years ago? Oh, that's crazy how in like 2 years, how much can change. 2 years ago, Jaylen Brown probably wouldn't be enough to get Ben Simmons, right? Would you guys agree with me with that or no?
100%.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, this very moment, that is absurd. The Sixers think they can get Jaylen Brown for a guy who pretty much the Sixers have no leverage. Ben Simmons, he doesn't care if he doesn't play, you know, a single minute for the Sixers anymore. He doesn't. And to be honest, I don't think he might not necessarily care if he ever plays anywhere again. I mean, from what I've heard, and I've seen the documentaries, even at LSU, he would be late to class, skip classes, or late to practice. And he just thinks that he just has this natural talent, which he does, and that he doesn't need to, you know, put his mind to it. And that's just not the case, especially playing at this high level in a city like Philly. And if he were to go to another big city, that's just not going to fly. So I still cannot believe that the Sixers' base asking price. Listen, obviously, feel it out. See who he can get. Ask for Jaylen Brown. But for be like, no, we're not going to get a deal done because you're not going to include Jaylen Brown is absurd, because no team is going to give you a player like that. They're just not.
Yeah, it's I think Philly is just very stuck on where they picked Simmons and what he produced for them, and now that's their mindset. But the reality is if they continue to stick with that mindset, they're going to end up nowhere. And then they're going to end up cutting the guy, which it would not end well for them, because then they're completely losing out on benefiting from Simmons at all. And I feel like it kind of screws up Simmons a little bit, because now he's in this free agent pool, if you will, and he hasn't had much to show for this season. So I think he's going to end up getting cut. Josh, I know you agree, but I guess I just want to play, you know, devil's advocate, if you will, here a little bit. If he somehow ends up getting traded, do you see a surprise team that comes out of nowhere? And this is open to both of you. Do you guys see a surprise team that comes out of nowhere and says, you know what, we're going to risk it all and send a high profile guy to get Simmons?
High profile guy? No. But the first team that immediately came to my mind when you said that is the LA Clippers. Right now, they are struggling. They have a solid star in Paul George, but with Kawhi Leonard out for the year, they don't have anyone else that could ball handle, that could take the load off of Paul George. Paul George already has given them like 38, 40 minutes a night, and it's still not enough to get the victories early on. So at least if they make a trade for Ben Simmons, send some role players, send picks, whatever, then they get a ball handler who could create open looks for Paul George and make it a little easier for him. How realistic is it? I don't know. I can't see many other teams, because for the most part, you're either a rebuilding team who you're just acquiring as many draft picks as you can, or you feel you're contending with what you have right now. You are feeling out with the guys that you have. Like the Knicks, for example, you just acquired Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier. You're trying to see where they fit with Tibbs' system. So the Knicks wouldn't be a team who makes a trade for Ben Simmons. So I don't really know. The Clippers are just the first team and the only team that came to my mind.
For me, and you know, I'm not going to go too in-depth with, well, they're in the East and they're in this division, and I'm not going to go crazy for right now. But I would say maybe the Washington Wizards. They've been playing well right now. And, you know, they could use a guy. You know, Ben Simmons was never, even like last year, was never a huge point scorer. He was more distributing the ball, running the ball down the court, you know, finding guys open, and then defensively. So I think he'd be great with Washington, Bradley Beal. Let Beal score, shoot all he wants. Simmons will get him open, get the other guys open, and then play good defense, which, you know, Washington, if I believe, has been playing. So I think, I mean, you know, the Wizards are 8-3. They're on top of the Eastern Conference right now. Obviously, do I see that lasting the whole season? Of course not. But who knows? I mean, Westbrook and Beal didn't play awful together. You know, they got into the playoffs last year. So if you get another guy who can, you know, plus Westbrook likes to shoot a little more than Ben Simmons does. So I don't know. I think I think Washington could be kind of under the radar team to come and be like, you know what, we'll take him. And there's not too much, like, what drama is there to be in Washington? You're not, you know, I just kind of feel, I feel like they're almost stuck because they're not, even though they're the number one team in the East right now, they're not a top team in the East. You know, it's still too early to, you know, again, going back to the early thing, like teams are trying to figure things out. So, and some of their first round draft picks, you know, Denny Avita from last year, he still hasn't really found his rhythm yet in this league. Corey Kispert, just a rookie. You know, he's more of a role guy right now. So I don't even know who their starting point guard is, but Bradley Beal is really like their main source of
offense. Spencer Dinwiddie.
Oh, Spencer Dinwiddie. That's right. That's right. I forgot they got him. Okay, that complicates things just slightly. But, you know, Dinwiddie's solid, but if you could package him and maybe a pick or so, I don't know. It depends how they value these guys. But from what I was thinking, Benson, or you just put Simmons at the forward and let him still carry the ball up, you know, and let Dinwiddie and Bradley Beal shoot and score, and Ben Simmons, you know, dish it out and get things going and play good defense. So I don't know, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see what Philly does with him because, like I said, they don't have, I think, any leverage at all in this situation.
No, they don't. And I like both of the teams. Clippers, I think, would be very interesting to have him. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to have him go out west. Washington would also be a very interesting option. But at the end of the day, we all can agree that Philly does not have much leverage. And if they're not willing to take what's coming, then that might be the end. But you know, Simmons, that hopefully he gets out of this because we did see some great, great strides from him. We did see some great talent from him. So there's potential there. Maybe a different team, different system. Things can improve. But for now, it's stuck, and it's sad to see a young athlete have to deal with this, especially with the team that drafted him so highly. But hopefully there's a turnaround. But on to some more enjoyable basketball. We'll go around the horn and we'll talk about our teams. Let's start off with Chicago. Stevie, my man. I mean, I know last week you got a little ripped there for repping Chicago, but the upside is that this is a good season to be a big Bulls fan. So I mean, you know, Lonzo, DeRozan, the numbers that they're putting up. Although Vucevic going into the COVID protocol is going to hurt a little bit. But still, I mean, this Chicago team, Stevie, what's been the big key to success that you've seen as a fan?
Well, LaVine actually just has talent surrounded by
LaVine, him. Of course.
You know? But LaVine before was just trying to do everything on his own. He had Saturnowski trying to run the floor last year. That's not going to work. He's got Lonzo Ball now, who Lonzo can run the court. He's got that good court vision. He's got good IQ. And then when he needs to, he'll hit big-time shots. So he's not scoring as much. But again, kind of like a Ben Simmons guy, scoring is not his main priority. You know, he wants to dish the ball, move the ball around, and let the scorer score, in which you see is happening. LaVine and DeRozan are like 7 and 8 for the league for the leading scorers. They're both averaging a little more than 25 points per game. That's fantastic. First time a Bulls duo has done that since Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. And we know what happened when they played. Some good things happened, you know. Granted, we're not going to talk about the relationship now or if they even ever had one, but I think DeRozan and LaVine have a great relationship. And I think DeRozan feels a little like rejuvenated again. He had so much success in Toronto. He was one of the main guys, if not the main guy there, and then gets traded for Kawhi. Plays in San Antonio. San Antonio doesn't seem the same success they did back when Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, and then Kawhi's first couple years there. You know, then Kawhi, of course, wins in Toronto. They win. DeRozan just misses out 1 year And then, you know, San Antonio hasn't really been the best team the past couple of years, so I think no one is really talking about him. But now he goes back into more prime time in a bigger city. The Bulls are, you know, they're doing well, so more people talk about it. So I think even at 32 years old, more people are starting to talk about him. He feels almost younger again. He feels like he, you know, he's making an impact. I think, I mean, because he was still averaging over 20 points per game every year with San Antonio, but no one was talking about it. So now that he's playing in a market like Chicago, he's having a lot of success. The team's having a lot of success. It's good for not only him, but everyone. And then again, Billy Donovan's second year. I'm liking what I'm seeing. Obviously, last night, blowout loss to the Warriors. I was actually watching all the game, and then, you know, halftime hit. I went to turn on Ferris Bueller's Day Off just to watch a little bit of that. Turn it back, and it's already like they were down by 20. I'm like, what the hell happened? But like you said, it doesn't help that Nikola Vucevic is in the COVID protocols. He's one of the top centers in this league. And I think if he would have had a monster game last night, if he played, and of course he didn't. And then losing Patrick Williams, I mean, I know he's just a second-year guy, and even if he wasn't scoring a lot, you know, having a guy like his presence there, very strong defensively, it hurts. So to have him go down that early and to miss, you know, the whole season, not just a week or 2 weeks or even a month, to miss the entire season, you know, it's tough. So I've heard rumors that the Bulls are still trying to go after a starting power forward. Not that they don't like Javonte Green, but Javonte Green is more reliable off the bench. Imagine, you know, him and again, Caruso. When the Bulls first signed Caruso, I was not mad, but I don't know. I thought Caruso was just getting a lot of hype for his appearance, not his play. But man, that dude has been balling out this year. So I love that signing so far. And really, again, it just goes back to the GM, the new regime, Arturas Karnasovas, I think that's how you pronounce his name, came from Denver. He saw the roster he built with Denver. And then Mark Eversley, our GM. And they just, the two of them really attacked the offseason in an aggressive manner, but in a smart manner. They didn't just get guys just to get guys. They got the right guys. They know the, you know, they knew we needed someone to lead the core, to bring the ball up. Lonzo Ball was that top guy, and they got him. We needed more scoring to pair with Zach LaVine that wasn't Vucevic, because, you know, you can't always have Vucevic behind the three or controlling the ball. You know, we need him defensively and, you know, by the paint. So they got DeMar DeRozan. A lot of people thought that wouldn't work out. And I think they've been proven wrong. So they went about this offseason in a smart manner, and that's why you see the Bulls 8-4. I believe they're like third or fourth in the conference. They're starting to beat good teams like Bronx's Nets. They beat the Jazz. They, you know, they just lost the Knicks, but the Knicks are a good team. I know they haven't been playing. You'll get to it. They haven't maybe been playing the best the past couple of games, but they're not getting demolished like they were even just a year ago. So I love what I'm seeing. I'm thrilled, you know, knock on wood, the Bulls are back. I think the league should be kind of like what we talked about with Allen last week. And I just hope they continue to play well and clinch a playoff berth so I can watch them come, you know, April, May, and June would be nice, but I might be getting, you know, just ahead of myself for now. But they better put them more on primetime, because I don't want to just watch last night's game and then have to go like 3 months without watching a Bulls game. I want to be watching the Bulls regularly and not just the same. You know, listen, Giannis is fun to watch, but I don't want to watch him every Friday night on ESPN. Just, or the Lakers. You know, I like, mix it up. Throw more Knicks, throw more Bulls. You know, maybe drop the Celtics a little bit. They're not doing that good. So put our teams up, right? Right, Castle?
Absolutely. I mean, if ESPN is listening here, get your scheduling intact. You know, Stevie B's got your primetime games. But no, I agree. And it's really great to see these changes with the Bulls. like you said, my Knicks beat them, but we'll get into that a little later. But Josh, your Nets, they've taken some bad beats this season, but we've seen some great storylines with your team so far. Of course, Durant playing like Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge, who we didn't even think was going to play basketball again, has been incredible with the numbers he's been putting up. Cam Thomas has been really solid. So talk about the improvement that you've seen from Brooklyn in these past few games. Because like I said, some bad beats and, you know, some games where I got a little concerned, but they've started to pick it up.
First off, I find it funny how you threw Cam Thomas in. He only scored his first basket in the NBA a lot, like 2 games ago.
It's all the KD hype. That's what it is.
That's true. That was funny when those two were going at it. Yeah, the Nets have taken some bad beats, but it's to teams that they're, I guess you would say, they're supposed to lose to, because those are competitive teams. The Bulls, the Bucks, the Heat, those are teams that are going to be contending for those top seeds in the East. So for the Nets to play them hard and lose, it happens. You're not going to go 82-0 in the NBA. You're not even going to go 71-10. This isn't the Golden State Warriors of 2017, where they're the only super team in the league and no one else can compete. That's not going to happen. So I do like what I'm seeing. I think the Nets' biggest issue from last year was defense, and that was addressed. There's a new philosophy in play. Their switches on defense look way more sharp than they did last year. There's more communication. Kevin Durant is playing like the best player in basketball. I can't see anyone else. Maybe Steph Curry topping him for that spot of being the best player in the league. He's averaging 30 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He plays any position, guards anyone on the floor, gets guys open, call his own number. James Harden is starting to look like the James Harden we all know and love to hate if you're not a Nets fan. Everyone was criticizing James Harden's play style. There's a rule change. Harden had a massive hamstring injury that he had to rehab all summer. It took him a few games to get adjusted to the new foul calling system that basically eliminates James Harden's play style. And what does he do? He's still dropping 40 points. He's still getting his 10 assists, 10 rebounds, triple-double nights. He's a freak. Patty Mills off the bench was a very underrated move. Joe Harris's shooting is lights out. Bruce Brown starting, really, his energy, his defense it's lights out. It's fun to watch. Castle, I know you're a Knicks fan, but this Nets team is fun to watch. There's a lot of people who like to criticize Kevin Durant for the moves he made in the past when he went to Golden State, but now he's come to Brooklyn. James Harden is there. This is a fun team, with or without Kyrie. Yes, the Nets miss him, but in his absence, it doesn't seem like Kyrie is even on the roster with how well the Nets have been playing recently, because they're getting guys to step up, and Kevin Durant is just playing at an MVP level, which obviously helps.
I really liked that last comment that you made, how doesn't even seem like Kyrie's on the roster, which is right, because this team has so many different guys outside of KD and Harden that they can be a very productive team. And it just makes you wonder how much longer Brooklyn is going to be willing to deal with Kyrie. I mean, there's still no timetable, right, for his return?
I mean, no, but it's up to Kyrie at this point. The Nets have said that they're not going to offer him an extension at this point, which means at the minimum, he'll serve out his contract. He's not a head case like Ben Simmons in the sense that there's issues in the locker room and the Nets are having problems with him. No, that's not true. The Nets have open communication. Kyrie is letting the Nets know what's going on in his life. They're talking about things non-basketball related. So I'm not worried. It doesn't seem like he's needed right now, which is definitely a good thing to see when you have guys like Bruce Brown, Joe Harris, DeAndre Bembry stepping up every night. It makes up in that absence going forward. I don't know what the deal is, and we'll cross that bridge when we need to.
Very fair. But listen, I can't deny, like you said, Brooklyn has been a fun team to watch. KD playing out of his mind. Personally, I think Curry is the best guy in the league right now, only because of what he's got with his current team situation. And he's just continuing to move up in the ranks, in my opinion, as one of the best shooters of all time. I mean, he's...
Oh, there's no question. I think he is the best shooter of all time. I don't think there's anyone who comes close to him, even his teammate, Klay Thompson.
Yeah. He's not even back yet still, which is crazy. Yeah. What it's going to be like when he gets back. Yeah,
the NBA definitely misses Klay Thompson, and it's going to be much better when he comes back. We all want to see him play, and we want to see the Splash Brothers play again. But when you talk all-around game, offense, defense, facilitating, scoring at any level, throw a Giannis on you or you throw a Pat Bev on you, it doesn't really matter. Kevin Durant could drop 30 points on any given night. Steph Curry, you know what he's going to do. You know he's going to beat you with a three. You throw a double team at him, he'll probably still make it, which is crazy. But defense, not so great. Facilitating, yes, he's one of the best point guards of all time. His assist numbers, though, aren't as high as they used to be. So I think it's very close between those two. I do think Curry is number two in the NBA. I think Kevin Durant is number one.
Listen, that's a very fair point about the defense. I think if Curry had a bigger defensive game, then it would be even tougher to talk about. But, hey, we can agree to disagree. I definitely can say, though, that they're both very up there, and it's very fun to watch them, especially Golden State. You know, I mean, you turn back the clock a few years. Golden State was one of the biggest teams in all of sports, and I think it's great for the league to see them playing the way that they are. I think it just continues to show that Steve Kerr is a great coach, and I'm really excited to continue to watch this Warriors team. I am.
And they're battling injuries, which is the crazy part.
Yep.
Wiseman hasn't even made his debut yet for this season. He was a rookie last year, so there's a lot of potential with him.
I like him a lot.
I will not be surprised if the Warriors end up making the finals when Klay comes back. I don't like what I'm seeing with the Lakers. And yes, I know they'll turn it around, but I think the floor spacing is not good with LeBron and Westbrook, just those two on the floor together, because those two are so ball dominant that want to assist and not look to shoot. In today's NBA, the three-point is golden, and the Lakers have terrible shooting besides Carmelo Anthony, who I'm so happy Melo's having this incredible year. I want Melo to get a ring, but not this year, not with the Lakers. But the Lakers' floor spacing is terrible, and I don't see them making a deep run. And if they face a team like the Suns or, like I said, the Warriors, I won't be surprised if they get bounced early in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a very interesting take and would not shock me. And I would be happy to see Golden State make it back, especially with how much – the league has shifted with where guys have gone and how LA has become the new powerhouse, if you will, in California. So very interesting to see what happens with Golden State. But I'm loving it so far, and I love Curry. So, but lastly, before we move on, got to quickly touch upon the Knicks. Been disappointing these past few games. We've had some big wins against the Bulls and the Bucks, Philly. I mean, you know, Philly and Milwaukee, okay, they were hurt. They got their issues, but it was still very big moral victories. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, Randle is still a little inconsistent for me. You know, he still takes these shots that I don't agree with. Kemba is not putting up the numbers that I thought he would. And I'll own up to it. I like Kemba, but he's not playing the way he should. I'll own up to it. Fournier's doing great. RJ is still needs to improve some things. But listen, when this team plays great, we're great. When we need to show up, we need to show up. But the problem is we're losing these games in the first half. And then when we try to come back the second half, if we can't pick it up, we can't pick it up. And the two biggest things that the Knicks need to do to continue to secure wins is play aggressive defense and do well in the transition game. And the two biggest guys that I've seen play some great defense has been Derrick Rose and Obi Toppin coming off the bench. They're stealing it. They're scoring hot in the transition. And, you know, that's probably one of my favorite parts of the Knicks is the guys that come off the bench and how well we can match up with these teams.
I just want to cut you off right now because you mentioned the Knicks bench. As of right now, so before if the Knicks have a game tonight, which I don't think they do, but for plus minus, Derrick Rose is third in the NBA in terms of plus minus. So basically points that the Knicks, positive points for the Knicks, not allowing opponents to score. He's at plus 110. The entire Knicks bench of Toppin, Quickly, Burks, Noel, all above like plus 40, which is really good. But the Knicks starters, Kemba Walker, is 11th worst in the NBA with negative 89. And then all of the Knicks starters are basically at negative 40 also. So if you want to point to why the Knicks are falling behind early, you could easily point to, well, the Knicks starters aren't getting it done right away. They're causing the bench to have to come back. And I've told you, and I think you like the idea, but you're not too sold on it. I think the Knicks should start Derrick Rose over Kemba Walker. I personally wasn't a fan of the move when the Knicks signed Kemba Walker because he doesn't fit the Knicks' system of defense, grit, gritty, tough. He's a point guard with a not-so-great shot from the outside, but he's good from the mid-range. He'll facilitate, but that's it. It really doesn't fit well. Like, Derrick Rose is a facilitator. He's aggressive. He's gritty. He's tough. Three-pointer, mid-range, driving, you name it. He does it all. Like, he's having a great career after what we thought was a career-ending multiple injuries, so happy for his success. But Kemba Walker, I'm not a fan of how he's playing. Clearly his best days were at UConn, so shout out Stevie. That's two UConn
party at Kemba.
That's two UConn plugs in one show, so Stevie's happy about that. RJ Barrett's inconsistency, I think that'll change because I like what I'm seeing with him. But Randall and Fournier, I don't know. I think the Knicks are still in a good spot in terms of where they'll be come the playoffs, but I think they'll just be there. I don't know if they'll do some damage.
I don't disagree with Derek being the starter, but the reason why I don't want him to is because I think he does such a good job leading the bench, and I think – and this goes off to my point of why the bench's numbers are looking better than the starter. Chemistry. This bench went through a lot last season. And these guys went through a lot, played well together. They already developed that going into the season. You know, Toppin and Quickly mentored by Rose and Gibson and Noel. So that's why I think the bench does better. I think they're just more familiar with each other. And they're a solid group. Solid group. Will Derrick Rose end up starting? Who knows? Maybe the second half of the season, Tibbs wants to mix it up. I really don't know. But I'll tell you this. If Kemba doesn't put up the numbers at a certain point, then you'll hear me on the show start pushing for Derrick. So I'm not totally disagreeing with you, Josh. But for now, I want Rose to stay where he is just because I love what he's doing with the bench.
But then it defeats kind of you're down early and then your bench has to fight back for you. As opposed to, let's say, you start Rose and Quickly, that chemistry is still there. Fournier and Kemba, they played together. Those two have chemistry too. There's no reason why they can't form a bond with the other guys on their team. So I think if the Knicks are looking to avoid those early starts and maintain a lead, you got to make a change, because now I think this is 3 games in a row that they've blown like a double-digit lead.
Yep. So. Listen, I don't doubt Tibbs. I think he'll make the proper adjustments for whatever he needs to do. I think at the end of the day, the Knicks can still be a playoff team. It's early in the season still, so I'm sure we can work this out. But hey, at the end of the day, if Rose ends up starting, wouldn't be opposed to it. But we'll see. We'll continue to talk hoops. More to come for this season. Another great season of the NBA. But before we wrap up the show, we'll transition to some pigskin, talk some NFL, just some short storylines to go over. Just found this out, actually. Julio Jones was officially put on the IR. He's going to be out a minimum 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. So kind of interesting now for Tennessee. No King Henry, no Julio. Tannehill's going to be thrown a lot more to A.J. Brown now. So it'll be interesting. We'll have to see. We didn't touch upon this last week, but, for those of you who don't know, Vegas wide receiver Henry Ruggs was arrested for a DUI where he was driving over 130 miles per hour. I believe he was driving over 150, hit someone at 130. She unfortunately died. So condolences to the family. Henry Ruggs, I believe, is now facing 50 years to life. Very sad. But drinking and driving is just not something that is cool. It's not something that should be condoned. And I think if you are someone who is in a position where you have enough money to get a driver and drink responsibly, you should do it. Also going on with Vegas, John Gruden filed a lawsuit against the NFL saying that they picked and choose things from the emails and leaked it to the press in a target attempt to get him fired. So we're going to continue to follow that with just some short headlines. But we got to talk the big stuff now. And we'll start off with the Rams, who won the OBJ sweepstakes and got him. So not only did they add a big guy to their offense, but recently getting Von Miller for their defense. So now they're looking powerful on both sides of the ball. However, it was just announced today that Robert Woods tore his ACL, out for the season. So Josh, we'll start with you. OBJ suddenly moving up on the depth chart, starting his first game Monday against San Francisco. Huge game. Is this the breakout for OBJ that he finally needed?
I think so. It makes me wonder, and I'm sure it'll make you guys wonder as well. OBJ, obviously, we heard that before he signed with the Rams, they weren't even in the conversation, but it took for a FaceTime with Jalen Ramsey to talk with the other guys on the team for him to kind of flip his opinion and sign with LA. It was reported that he actually got hurt on practice the day that Odell signed. So I wonder if he knew at the time, and when we didn't, if Robert Woods was going to be out for the year. So he kind of thought then that he was going to be behind Cooper Kupp instead of be behind Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. So it's kind of interesting for me to think that. We'll never actually know if that is true or not. Just the thought I had. I'm excited to see his debut. I'm excited to see Von Miller's debut. More so Von Miller, I think, only because pairing him, Aaron Donald, and Jalen Ramsey, like, you can't even do that in Madden because of how highly rated all of them are, how elite all three of them are in the game. You have an unstoppable linebacker, corner, and nose tackle. I don't know how a defense could avoid seeing at least one of them somehow. If you get early pressure from Donald, if you somehow escape that, got to worry about you're checking down where Von Miller is. Okay, great. But then you have Jalen Ramsey automatically shutting down your best receiver. So it's a matchup nightmare for offenses and offensive coordinators that no team really wants to deal with. Gasly, yeah, so you're lucky your Giants already played the Rams and got beat down bad. And that was before they added in Beckham and Von Miller, so you don't need to worry about that anymore. But I think the Rams are a clear Super Bowl favorite now. I don't see many teams in the AFC being able to compete with them when it comes to Super Bowls. So I think when it comes to NFC Championship, the Bucks, the Rams, that'll be basically the best game of the football season this year.
I have to think that they're the favorite too to come out of the NFC. It'll be interesting to see what kind of relationship Stafford and OBJ develop. Stevie, do you agree? Do you see the Rams as the favorite, or do you think Mr. Tom Brady and the Bucks could give them a run for their money?
Or Justin Fields. We can't forget about Justin Fields.
Hey. Stevie. Well, it's funny. You said good thing the Giants played the Rams already. Well, thank God the Bears played the Rams. Thank God the
Andy Dalton led Bears. That's right. Week one.
Yeah, week one. So thank God we got them out of the way before Von Miller and OBJ came to town. But here's my thing. I thought the Rams were Super Bowl favorites or contenders, I should say, from the start of the season. Ever since they got Matt Stafford, most people, even with Jared Goff, and Jared Goff did lead them to the Super Bowl, 3 years ago now when they lost to the Patriots. So when they just got Matt Stafford and himself, I thought that was a huge upgrade. And then they get Von Miller and now OBJ. But I find it pretty ironic that the day they announced Odell will be playing Monday night, Robert Woods goes down with an injury. Really, Robert Woods went down yesterday, and then today it was diagnosed. So I do feel bad for him. But I think so. Because Odell, to be honest, he's not really a distraction anymore. And my thing with Odell was he wanted to play for a contender. And that's why you saw the Packers, the Saints, the Chiefs, and all this. But he also wanted that big market, that big city again. That's where he thrived. New York City, Odell was like the king of New York back during his Giant days. He just loved that. That's what he gravitated towards. So when he went to Cleveland, he wasn't getting any attention there. And then especially when they weren't doing well with him and then he got hurt, no one paid attention to him. And I think that made him more humble. But I think now he will love this attention again, but he's much more mature now. And now I think he's focused on, clearly it's nothing with the money anymore, because he said in order to be released, he had to agree that they had to rework his contract that made him the highest paid receiver. When he signed, obviously not anymore. But when he first signed it, he was like the highest paid wide receiver. But clearly money wasn't in matter to him anymore. He just wants to win. So he wanted a contender. He wanted a big city team. And he got the Rams because, to be honest, Green Bay, that's not a big market at all. Yes, he'd be on a contending team. Yes, he'd be playing with Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers. But, what are you going to do in Green Bay? Absolutely nothing, So... I could see him almost possibly signing an extension with the Rams, depending on how their financials are, because they're going to have to work that out, because no way they can pay Stafford, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, probably soon to be Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and then Odell. That's just, there's no way in hell you're doing that. The Bears are cash, Stafford cash, and besides Khalil Mack, Eddie Jackson, who else are we paying? So, but back to the matter at hand. I do think they are. And you saw with the Buccaneers last year, you know, their big thing was they already had Godwin and Mike Evans, but they needed a quarterback upgrade, and they got that quarterback upgrade and Brady. And then they just, you know, then they landed Fournette and Antonio Brown. I was like, holy crap, like Buccaneers just keep getting every guy available, and that's what the Rams seem to be doing. And they're saying, screw the draft picks. We want the guys who have made names for themselves and who are all pro players in this league. And that's what they're doing. And you know what? To be honest, you can't get mad at the Rams for being aggressive. They want to win. That's what they're doing. You see a lot of teams that they're interested. I mean, not to roast the Packers, but, and this might bite me in the ass because then they might go out and acquire a huge star. But the Packers have been this close to winning a Super Bowl the past like couple of years. All they need to do is go out and make a splash. And yet they've played it, you know, they paid it, like they haven't gone out and been aggressive like the Rams have. You know, they try to draft a guy to learn under Rodgers, or they draft a guy to hope compliments Jair Alexander. Like, no, go out. And they made some of those moves when they signed Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, and it paid off because they went from missing the playoffs to making, you know, a deep playoff run. Then you needed some guys on the offensive side, and they never did that. So kudos to the Rams for doing that. I just hope that I have Cooper Kupp on one of my fantasy teams. So I hope that, you know, Cooper Kupp doesn't go from scoring 30 points a game as a receiver to now like 15. But I'm excited to watch this Rams team. And, you know, as much as the Rams kind of sometimes annoy me, I respect Stafford. Odell's been a tough guy. I never was a huge fan of him in New York. I respected his game. I was never a huge fan. But I kind of respect his, you know, where he's going to now. At first, I was upset that he signed the Rams, but the more I was thinking about it, the more it made sense. So and it's an exciting time for LA to be a Rams fan. And I think this is a perfect game Monday night to have Von Miller and Odell debut against the 49ers and show the world what they can do. Because that team has a lot of talent, a lot of talent.
It's funny that you talked about the Packers missing out. I don't know if this is all true, but apparently the front office did not make enough of a push for Odell and that they were only offering him the veterans minimum.
Well, that's what, you know, and I know they're kind of, I don't think they had a lot of cap space.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I like the Rams somehow made it work. You know, you can somehow make it work. You can always make it work somehow. And when, and a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., I mean, like I said, that was the first time he was a free agent in his career. But there's not too many times where a guy just gets released mid-season, clears waivers, and is a free agent for anyone to sign. You know, and he was really debating between the Packers and the Rams, I guess. And at first, you know, the Rams weren't even a team that was being mentioned. It was like a surprise. You know, I honestly thought he was going to go to the Packers. I thought maybe at first the Saints, because he's from Louisiana, he went to LSU. I thought that would be kind of a good homecoming. I don't like the Saints. But, again, it's not about what I like and don't like. They just – I don't think their quarterback play was strong enough for him. He obviously really wants to win a Super Bowl. And too, like you said, if, you know, if he starts doing well with the Rams – he might just stay out there. You know, like I said, he might just sign an extension and he might not ask for big money. He might just want to keep playing where he's going to win. And I think the Rams are probably the best choice, and he made that choice.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the three teams that were listed, Green Bay, KC, New Orleans, definitely the best option for him, not just personnel-wise, player-wise. He has a house in L.A., spent a lot of time there in the offseason. McVay is a young coach. I think it's good, and it's exciting for football fans, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Rams can do. another guy who was picked up, scooped up, and playing for not only a new team, but his former team where he made his name. Mr. Cam Newton is a Carolina Panther again, signing him to, I think it was a one-year, $4.5 million deal. That's guaranteed up to $10 million he could be getting. But wow, what a wonderful homecoming for Cam Newton. Josh's former guy, Sam Darnold, out 6 to 8 weeks. Terrible to see. Don't know what the future holds for him. But Josh, you know, Cam Newton back in Carolina, can he do something? I mean, we saw the struggles that he was having with this New England team. You think familiar settings, new coach could be the turnaround he needs?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what he does. I don't know what it'll be like for him, because he'll be good with Christian McCaffrey, because everyone, it seems like, is good with Christian McCaffrey. He's got receivers, which he didn't have last year. Last year's New England offense really had no one. So it'll be interesting to see what he'll do. I don't think it'll be the super Cam Newton that, and the MVP Cam Newton that Carolina Panther fans are expecting to get. I think he'll be a solid option for them, an upgrade over Darnold. And I could see them making a late push for the playoff hunt, because that last spot in the NFC is very wide open. Even the Giants are in the hunt. So I don't know what the future holds for the Panthers, but I think they'll continue to be competitive and limit the amount of turnovers that they've been having with Darnold as quarterback.
Very fair point. Stevie B, how about you? Is Superman Cam making his return, or you go more along the lines of what Josh is saying?
Listen, I don't think he's going to return to what he was in his MVP season, the Super Bowl 50 appearance season. But I think he'll have much more success than he did in New England. And it might be a spark, like, you know, that the Panthers need. They start off 3-0, and now they're what? Are they 3-5 or 3-4?
Yeah, 3-5.
3-5. So they just have not had any sort of, their defense was playing well, and now their defense is not playing as well. Their offense was moving the ball, and now their offense sucks. So, you know, it might be what Cam Newton needed to turn his career around. It might be what the Panthers need. Now, obviously, Cam Newton's not the solution for the Panthers at the quarterback position. And you can see, again, not just because I'm a Bears fan, but passing over a guy, this is why I didn't want the Bears to take a Sam Darnold, you know? Because then if this situation didn't pan out, and, you know, we saw it, Sam Darnold's not panning out for the Panthers, now you're still looking for that quarterback. Like, that's why I was so nervous of the Panthers and Broncos, and when they didn't take Justin Fields, I was surprised, or any of the quarterbacks, even Mac Jones. So it'll be interesting to see. It's hard to tell. Ever since his injury, Cam Newton is not the same. I think that's really what's holding him back. His body took a beating during his first, you know, tenure with the Panthers. So he's a lot older now. But he's got a lot more weapons in Carolina than he did in New England. So I think he'll do okay, but he's not going to be back to Superman. But I'm sure he's glad to be back, and I'm sure the fans are thrilled to have him back in Carolina.
Absolutely. And this just makes the quarterback situation all more interesting. I think Sam Darnold will probably end up getting traded one way or another. I think a team could really utilize him. Very sad to see, though, because he did have a hot start to the season. But it's a good homecoming for Cam Newton. I like Matt Rhule as a coach, reunited with DJ Moore, McCaffrey. So it'll be good. It'll be an interesting turnaround for Carolina. They've gone, you know, up and down and up and down, but maybe this is an up point. But we'll have to see. Now, before we conclude the show, we always got to end, for you fantasy lovers, with our start and sits. And my two starts this week might be a little obvious, might not, but I feel solid about them. So I'm going to go ahead and get the ball rolling. My first start is receiver for the Raiders, Hunter Renfrow. I really like Renfrow. I believe they're going up against the Chiefs this week. Chiefs defense, I mean, has been a mess. You know, the Chiefs in general have not been the team that everyone thought they would be, even though they just got DeSean Jackson. I like the relationship between Renfrow and Carr, and I think he's going to provide a big spark to them in the slot game. Look for him to average between 13 to 17 points with a touchdown. That's been, you know, the stats for his bigger games. And the other guy might be even more obvious just because of the matchup, but it's Najee Harris for the Pittsburgh Steelers going up against the winless Lions at home. Harris has been really good with getting those chunk of yards. He's been one of the bigger offensive producers on that team. So definitely is a guy to start this week. Whether you automatically start him or you got him in a rotation because you happen to have gotten great running backs, definitely start Harris this week. Mr. Fromwitz, you're up.
So my first start is a tight end, and it's Dan Arnold of Jacksonville.
I like that a lot.
He has really helped out Trevor Lawrence in the passing game. He's been getting between 8 to 10 targets recently. Was traded from Carolina to Jacksonville. Very helpful. They're playing Indianapolis this week. Now, Indy might end up coming away with the victory, but that doesn't matter. Their defense is not as strong as it was last year. We saw last Thursday the Jets put up 30 on them. Over 400 yards. Josh Johnson, 300 through the air as a backup to Mike White. So I really like Trevor Lawrence's shot at throwing to his big tight end. And they have so many injuries that I can't even think of who else that'll be healthy on their team that poses another threat for targets. So Dan Arnold, I think it's a safe pick. I'm starting him in my big league. So that's my first start. And then the other start is Russell Gage. Now, Castle, I'm sure you're happy to hear he's sitting on your bench right now. The Falcons are going up against the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys looked very strong to start the year. Trayvon Diggs is balling out. He's one of the best corners in the league. He has six interceptions. And the Cowboys defense is looking good. I'm not denying that. Last week, they struggled a bit against Teddy Bridgewater and the Denver Broncos. Matt Ryan is still a pretty good quarterback in this league. We don't know what the status is for Calvin Ridley for even the foreseeable future. Might be out for the year, might end up coming back at some point. We don't really know. But between Kyle Pitts, Russell Gage, those are two solid, and Cordarrelle Patterson, of course. I don't really know who Matt Ryan ends up throwing to the most, but I do know Russell Gage will be getting a healthy amount of targets now. Whether he's behind those two, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores. Dallas' defense gives up points. They give up yards. So they're not a lockdown defense like some of the other top teams in the NFC. So those are my two starts.
Very solid. I'll have to really think about Gage, and you'll see why I say that. But very, very good. Stevie B, who are we starting this week?
You want to know who I'm starting? I'll tell you. So number one, D'Ernest Johnson, running back Cleveland Browns. Nick Chubb, and then I forgot who the heck they're – well, Kareem Hunt's been hurt. Nick Chubb and their other running back are on the COVID reserve list. So D'Ernest Johnson's like the legitimately like the only healthy running back on the squad for Sunday. So expect him to get a lot of carries and attempts and stuff like that. And the one game where he received, you know, most of the a lot of workload, Week 7 against Denver, I mean, he got 24.8 points. He had over 100 rushing yards, a touchdown, you know, a few receptions. So he's going against a Patriots defense. You know, it's one of the better defenses in this league. But he took advantage the last time, and I think, you know, he's going to need to, too. So I believe he will have a big game. And then my other star, Michael Pittman Jr., receiver for the Colts. I'm sure many people know his name by now. He's ranked at least in this ESPN league, as the seventh best receiver. He's playing Jacksonville's defense, we know. And granted, it's funny because they played fantastic last week against the Bills, but I think that he's going to – I mean, he's been – ever since – the past 3 weeks, he's been phenomenal. 20.5 points, then 30.6, and then 17.4. He's been scoring a lot the past 3 weeks. Carson Wentz loves him. I know, obviously, they're going to use – you know, they're going to run the ball a lot. But when they throw, and they will throw, they like number 11s. So, and I think he's got a good matchup. So, Dearness Johnson and Michael Pittman, if you have him, start him.
Love the Pittman start. He's one of my favorite receivers in the league, and I really like what I've seen out of Wentz. So, and with the Chubb injury, I think the Johnson or not injury, it's COVID protocol. Yeah, so that's a no-brainer. So, solid, Stevie. Here are my two sits for this week, and this contradicts one of Josh's starts. Sit Matt Ryan. If you happen to have him as your quarterback, sit Matty Ice. Playing against Dallas, they're coming off a bad beat. I don't know. I just think that, you know, Trayvon Diggs, he is just so good. It concerns me going up against a guy like Matt Ryan. And Micah Parsons could have a big game. There's a lot going for the Dallas defense. So if you are in a bigger league where you start Matt Ryan, I say sit him. And the other guy that I think you should sit is Dallas Goedert, tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm seeing a lot from Devonta Smith. I think that he's going to be big in this game against Denver. I think that when Hurts struggles being in the Denver environment, he's going to go to what's safe. So, yeah, unfortunately, Josh, your man Dallas Goedert, I'm saying to sit him. Those are my two sits for this week. Josh, take us home with your sits.
Well, I'm going to contradict one of your sits now because I'm sitting Devontae Smith as my first one. For the same reason that you're sitting Dallas Goedert, I think the opposite, because I think in a big environment like right? It's Denver that they're playing?
Yeah, they're playing.
Yeah. So I think when Jalen Hurts is under pressure, tough defense, lockdown corner, passer Kane is going to be locking up his former teammate, Devontae Smith. So it'll be like the college days, college practices with those two. I believe Jalen Hurts will be trying to look for his safety target, which is a tight end. That's every quarterback safety valve. Might dump off to his running backs. They've got a bunch. So the safe to say is it's tough to start many Eagles in this matchup if there's already two Eagles that have been mentioned. So I'm sitting Devontae Smith. And now I like to be bold. Right, Castle? Right, Stevie? I've been bold with some of my picks before.
You have. No, can't lie there.
I think it's safe to say I'm ready to take it up a notch and go with my biggest one yet. Are you boys ready?
I mean, you're kind of making me nervous here now.
Stevie, no need to be nervous. I hope this doesn't impact your league. But this week, I want to sit Patrick Mahomes.
Wow. I mean, I don't have him, so... Good. Doesn't impact me, but
I think there's a former head of social media who's punching the air right now with that one, Josh.
I think so too. And I think he's punching the air even more so because he has Robert Woods, and I told him and I said to sit Devontae Smith too. But the reason I want to sit Patrick Mahomes is because he's going up against Vegas's defense. And they definitely haven't been one of the best, but they're a middle pack defense. With very good pressure from the front guys. They get to the quarterback, Carl Nassib. They're ballers this year. And I really like what their pass rush is doing. Pat Mahomes is not Pat Mahomes right now. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if someone like changed bodies with him, but turning the ball over for every game and like seven games straight now, more interceptions than any year combined. He's leading the league with 11 interceptions, and it's only week 9, week 10. So I don't know what's going on with Pat Mahomes, because he's definitely not playing like a former MVP. So if you have Pat Mahomes, I'm sure by now you've gotten so frustrated that you've sat him. But against Vegas's defense, they're playing really well lately. The Giants had a tough matchup with them, and the Giants did win. So the Raiders are coming off a bad loss in their minds, and they're going to be coming out physical and ready to play. I would sit Pat Mahomes. So those are my two sits.
We like it bold, though, Josh. We like it bold. It makes it more exciting. Very interesting to see what Patty does this week. Like I said, the Chiefs have been all over the place. And Smith, it's interesting because I think Surtain is questionable at this moment. So if he ends up playing, not playing, it'll be interesting to see which one of our sits ends up panning through. But last, but certainly not least, Mr. Benazzo, who are you sitting?
Well, you know, it's tough to rebound after that. I mean, that was a big sit. But mine, my first one, and I, you know, from the week he had previously, could be big. James Conner versus Carolina. You know,
that hurts.
You got James Conner, Castle?
I do, and you know what? It would make sense if he ends up being a sit this week, because last week, and one of my, even though I didn't need him last week, I sat him when he had the 40-point game, so.
Figures. Here's my thing. He just went off last week. I mean, 40 points on real, at least in the league, you know, that I'm paying attention to. Either way, he scored high 30s to, you know, within the 40 range, which is a lot of points, especially for a guy like him. I just, even if he has a really good week, you know, he's not putting up a week like that. So I don't want people to think, well, he just put up 40 points and then expect him to now put up like that. And then if he doesn't, get upset. So the safer bet is, you know, he could just go back to his normal, you know, 10 to 12 point range, which, you know, is not the worst, but it's nothing spectacular. And plus, if Kyler Murray returns, you know, they're just going to air it out again. So, you know, they needed Connor to step up for Colt McCoy when Murray was out, and he did. But if Murray's back, you know, they're not going to need Connor as much anymore. And plus, now with Chase Edmonds out, because I think he probably will be out because he had an ankle sprain. I don't know, Benjamin has shown flashes, but he doesn't have the other guy. Like, when Connor's on the field now, it's going to be a lot of eyes on him. So I just don't think he's going to reciprocate the same performance he had last week. So that's why I think he's a sit. Carolina's defense for most of the year has played really well. So I think, you know, so sit him. And then my other one, little Monday night action, Brandon Ayuk versus the Rams. The Niners passing game has looked really well, especially the past couple of weeks. Jimmy G starting to get in a rhythm with the receivers. But like we just talked about earlier, that Rams defense is just unreal. Now with the addition of Von Miller, I mean, that pass rush is going to be insane against the Niners. I don't know how much time Jimmy G is going to even have to pass. And then Jalen Ramsey, you know, it obviously you think he'd be shadowing Debo because Debo is like the second leading receiver in yards in the league right now. But Jalen Ramsey has been playing the slot a lot this year. And, you know, if Ayuk's lining up in the slot, then don't expect him to get many touches or many catches because Jalen Ramsey is locked down. So I think the Rams, who knows, maybe the 49ers will go out and just smack the Rams, but I don't think so. I think the Rams defense is going to lock down the 49ers offense, and I don't think Brandon Ayuk will have a good game. So my sits, James Conner, Brandon Ayuk. You know, it's kind of tough to tell this week, but I opted to go with those guys.
Both bold. Ayuk I really like because I think Debo's been more the guy this season. And Conner, I can definitely see it. Hope you're wrong, but also hope you're right. So we'll have to see, but solid picks all around. But with that, that concludes the episode. But before we say goodbye to you guys, just a couple of quick shout outs. First, we want to give a shout out to our partner, Wild Chat Sports. Kevin and all of them are doing some great things over there. So definitely go check them out. Check their podcast out, their Instagram. They're a really great, great platform for a mix of celebrities and sports. It's really cool stuff. Also want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Liberty Shirt Co. They're making some great shirts. As we know, Alan came on, talked about it last week. Don't forget to use that code at the beginning of the episode if you want that discount for some great quality shirts. And last but not least, give a shout out to our main man, TJ, running the social media, continuing to give you guys all the updated news and sports. So if you don't follow already, go check out the Instagram at the 3P podcast. As always, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you folks next week.